Today's show is sponsored by Miracle Made. And oh my God, you guys, you know that I love a luxurious set of sheets. And I now have such a set of sheets because of a Miracle Made. They are bedding that has been inspired by NASA. They've got silver-infused fabrics that actually make temperature regulating a thing. So you're not like getting too hot or too cold or whatever, you know, the whole thing that happens with your body's temperature losing its mind. Miracle Made helps with that. One of the little things that my husband particularly loves about Miracle Made is that it like doesn't have as much bacteria as regular sheets because of it's infused with this silver that prevents up to 99.7% of bacterial growth. So it leaves the sheets cleaner for longer. And then the thing for my husband is that it doesn't give him acne, which is like an issue for some people. But more than all of that, it's just luxuriously comfortable and delightful. And it has that cooling feeling while also being cozy. Very hard to achieve those two things at the same time. I mean, Miracle Made, come on, well done. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and buy some sheets today. And if you order today, you can save 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION at the checkout and you'll get 3 free towels and save an extra 20%. So there's just a lot of savings here, folks. Order today, you'll get 40% off. Use the promo code FAKETHENATION. Go to trymiracle.com/FAKETHENATION. And Miracle's so confident in their product, it's backed with a 30-day money-back guarantee. So if you're not 100% satisfied, which I don't see happening, you'll get a full refund. Upgrade your sleep with Miracle Made. Go to trymiracle.com/fakethenation and use the code FAKETHENATION to claim your free 3-piece towel set and save over 40% off. Again, that's trymiracle.com/fakethenation to treat yourself. Thank you, Miracle Made, for sponsoring this episode.
Fake the Nation, episode 236.
Hello, hello. This is Fake the Nation, where we talk about news, we talk about politics, and where we take colorful threads, warm yellows and reds, bold blues and bipartisan purples, and we delicately cross-stitch them onto the light, fluffy, inviting pillow that is America. And the message on the pillow reads, "We fucking did it, motherfuckers. We fucking did it." I am your host, Nagin Farsad, and I shall lie my head on that pillow and sleep well, question mark? Like maybe for the first time in years? I don't know. So today, we're going to talk about the fuckball presidency that was. But then, we're going to turn it around and talk about the inauguration that is and the future that is to come. And for today's panel, I'm so excited to welcome to the show these two, both of them podcasters, who are, first of all, I met this first podcaster on her podcast, So Money. She is the host of that podcast. She's also a financial author. She's also like another Iranian lady because we're just rife with them. They're all over the place. And she's so delightful. That show is so great. You should absolutely be subscribing to So Money. Folks, it's Farnoosh Torabi. Hey, Farnoosh.
Hey, everyone. Hey, Nagin. Thank you so much for that generous intro. I'm excited to be with you here on Inauguration Day. I'm excited. This is a good day. And yes, there are many more Iranian women out there. We should know who they are. We're a nice group.
And soon we will. I didn't mean to sound so evil saying that. I mean that in a gentle and loving way, world. And also joining us on the show today, oh my God, I had the distinct honor of being on a lineup with Cameron on her show in Los Angeles at the UCB. That's how I met her for the first time. But you know what? It wasn't the first time I heard about her because she is hilarious. I've delighted in her jokes for a long time now. She's also a best-selling author. How many of us can say that? A best-selling author. Hello. And also a podcast host because she does it all. Folks, it's Cameron Esposito.
Yay.
Hey, Cameron.
Yay. I don't know. It's because y'all are both on the East Coast?
Yes.
Yeah.
So it's early
for you.
Well, it's like not early, but it's actually just that I've already had such a full day so far at this time. You know what I mean? Like my eyes popped open with that like really like it's inauguration morning vibe at like 6. And then I got right to work, you know, right to work, sitting and watching. So I feel as if I'm like ready to go back to bed or eat some dinner.
Exactly. It's already been an emotional roller coaster. And either way, it's 1:45. And I think, you know what? Let's get into it with topic number one. So it is. It's 1:45 here Wednesday afternoon on the East Coast. And Joseph Robinette Biden was just now inaugurated. I feel like I've been through a roller coaster of emotions. The last 4 years are over. We'll call it 5 years because that voice was thrust into our faces for like a full year before the elections of 2016. So we've had to deal with him for a very long time.
I kind of start at the full birth certificate demand.
Oh, like
that's really where I start in terms of my
the slippery slope. Yeah,
mental strain. Actually, like we can go ahead. We can. I think a good place would be for every person who's listening to this to really reflect on when did this man come into your life?
Oh man,
like what's your? Because that's such a personal.
It's a personal.
Question.
Yeah. When did Donnie come into your
him?
Life? Yeah. It was birtherism. I mean, he was a New York person and like an apprentice and The Apprentice, but I never watched a single episode. I still have, I've only seen clips less than 3 seconds long. So I really have no idea about any of that.
Right. And we're all too young for the Central Park 5 full page ad to be our reference point for him. Like our reference point for him in our childhoods is like, the fact that he was on Pizza Hut commercials and that he was in Home Alone 2 and that his name was on buildings. So it does feel like a and then The Apprentice.
Yeah, I started a job at New York One News, which is like our local CNN here in New York. This was
I love New York
yes, One. Yes. Now it's called Spectrum New York One, whatever. It will always be New York One. And I remember my first week on the job, I was a producer for the business desk. And one of the on-camera reporters had snagged an interview with Donald Trump. And it was going to be, you know, the irony of all this is the joke
like,
is sort
was
of
it
on
a big deal?
New York. It was such a big deal, you know? And I wasn't even allowed to go because they didn't know what if I was like a freak or not. Like, if was I going to ruin the, was I going to like, control myself at the interview. They didn't know yet. I just started. So they're like,
right.
You're
the freak in the interview.
We can't bring you.
You're the one.
And
that's the time period we're talking about.
Yeah. And I also ran into Donald Trump one time backstage at a morning show and he was getting his makeup done and I was getting my makeup done. And this was, I think this was before he ran. And perhaps he was just sort of like more the apprentice guy. And he got up from his chair and he kind of looked at some of the other women in the chairs and he was like, beautiful, beautiful. And we were all like, okay, Donald Trump, like, I guess that's that's supposed to send me off on having a good day. But it is a story that I still tell people. So apparently it did stay with me.
Are you planning on retiring that story now that his presidency that the fuckball presidency is over?
Well, it still really captures him so perfectly, right? Like that's all that matters to him is sort of like what things look like and how and then that he even thinks that his opinion matters, you know? Like we were I had a lot going on that morning. Like Donald Trump's opinion of me was not going to make or break my segment on that morning show, but in some ways it is very perfectly him, right?
Yeah. In his mind, he was like, "I'm gonna make their day." You
I'm
know,
validate
I mean?
And these
it's like,
people.
It's I love that. Yeah, that was going on. Well, you know what? Let's first talk about just like because I'll tell you, I've had such weird feelings in the last few days. I've been really jittery, and at first, I wasn't sleeping well, and I just was like jittery. And I think sure the threat of violence will do that to a person, but I also think it's just 4 years. I think it must be like the feeling like a prisoner has before they leave. They're just like excited but nervous but like what if something goes wrong, you know? I don't know. How now that it's over, how do you feel?
I have similar sentiments. I think that today, Inauguration Day, for me at least, is the start of the new year. Like 2021 starts now. We've had a lot of resets, I think, since January 1. We were like, January 6th happened, and we're like, okay, that wasn't the new year. Like, okay, now let's start over. And then, you know, yeah, I have this sort of cautious optimism. I call it a healthy state of panic. It's actually the name of my next book, which was very much, you know, I think seated in this pandemic, where you just have to sort of, you still have to do your life. You still have to make important decisions every day, big decisions, little decisions. And there is this feeling of like, what's even, what is it worth? You know, why even bother? I mean, we all have that stream of thought. Like, what's the point? You know, like today in my son's Zoom class, he's six, a little girl said, the teacher asked, if you could be president or vice president, which would you be and why? And she said, I think I would be vice president because a woman can't be a president. And this is like a very liberal town, you know, where I think 99.9% of the people voted Democrat and probably for Hillary Clinton at one point. And so we still have a lot of work to do on so many fronts, but I think that at least we're moving in the right direction. I can feel like there is some positive momentum here, so I got to hold on to that.
Cameron, what stood out to you from the last 4 years? Is there any memorable moments?
Yeah, I mean, well, first of all, I just want to say that, you know, I really appreciate where Farnoosh is at, because I do think that especially white people who are the hyper-liberal white folks, I've seen a little bit of like, how is this any better-ism? About like, Kamala the cop, like those are those types of people.
Right.
And I do need those types of people, if they're white people, to go ahead and take a seat for just a day, you know, like no one, I don't think anybody expects for politicians to be trustworthy or perfect.
Right.
I think for some reason on the left, we've come up with this idea that it's like, what we're looking for are the honest politics. What?
An angel descended from heaven.
None of the job description.
Leadership.
It's not in the job description. So I feel like I'm looking at this with like, my eyes are fully open. I think I'm looking at this reasonably. And I think that it really is about, you know, the last president that we just had. You guys remember him? He's from earlier this morning. Before he was elected, before people even could vote for him.
Okay, the greatest hits start here.
Audio of him talking about committing a crime.
Right.
Because to menace women, to assault women, that is a crime.
Yeah.
And it's not, you know, when he says things are inflammatory in their racism, in their sexism, in their, in speaking about the poor, speaking about Mexicans as rapists, those things are terrible. They are also not necessarily admissions of a crime. And I think that what is spectacular about this particular president is that multiple times we've had that.
Yeah.
You know, we've had him like colluding with Russia. We've had him, I would say the policy of family separation is a crime, as opposed to saying that Mexicans are rapists. Again, not good, nothing that should be voted for, but to have a president
versus actual crime. Yes.
Yeah, who's actively committing crimes and to know that about him before he's elected. This is somebody who brags about criminal behavior and then gets up on stage. I will never forget that debate with Hillary Clinton where he followed her around the stage and you could see, you know, I'm a survivor of sexual assault. When I watched him, there wasn't a part of me that wasn't like, oh, I know what this behavior is. Like he was stalking her on stage and we all saw it and he was still elected. Like we heard him talk about his behavior. We saw what that behavior would look like and then he was elected. And so I just think that that stands out to me as what makes this president so different. Again, have there been presidents who have done anything under the sun? Yes. I do not think this is a perfect office. I do not even necessarily think it's good, but I do think that it stands out when the person's a crime boss, which is what we just had.
Right. And you ticked through a few of the hits already, like Mexicans are rapists and grab them by the P word that I always find difficult to say. And even though I'll be like,
oh, pussy, I'll say
with great ease, but I can't for some reason. Ugh. Kids in cages. Let's also not forget what he was impeached for. He was impeached for that perfect phone call with the Ukraine. The other thing that I think also rises to the level of crime, again, I like this, like the three of us as legal scholars talking about what rises to the level of crime, is the Bible photo op, because he cleared out a bunch of peaceful protesters with pepper spray and just general menace. And to me, that feels just like some kind of criminal to do a fucking photo op with the Bible. It was dumb. Like it was horrendous. It was criminal. All that I felt like was really, and it was just tone deaf to where the country was at with racial justice. I mean, the whole thing, like it was fucking bananas. Farnoosh, do you have any favorites?
Yeah, just to jump off on that. I mean, so yes, the last 4-5 years was a lesson in criminality in action, from our president. But also, I think was also a narrative about those who voted for him, who is America, and also the media sucked, like even just today or yesterday, ABC News, which I love, I've been on ABC. I love the people who work at ABC, but this particular article characterized the former president as having a unique approach to the presidency. And this was in the context of talking about his impeachment, his double impeachment. Sometimes I think the media just didn't, go there enough mm-hmm. with him yeah, yeah, and really yeah. call him out. And so the reason he was allowed time and time and time again to be a criminal and get away with it was, one, his supporters, and two, I think the way that his actions were translated in the press. And a lot of that, of course, isn't traditional media's fault. It's also like there is false news out there. There are conspiracy theories out there. Social media had a big hand in this. And so I think that when history is written, yes, it's going to be a lot about Trump's behavior and the worst president, et cetera, but also what supported that, what allowed for that. And I think, hopefully those were lessons that we can also take into this next presidency. And I think we have learned a lot of our lessons, at least with the media, in regards to the media.
I was watching an MSNBC this morning. I don't know where you all watched, but it is interesting to hear folks like at this point talking, to hear like Rachel Maddow at this point talking, because it does feel like some helpful evaluations of what is going on. Another thing that I'll say, just to have some compassion for people who are actual journalists and not like infotainment
pundits. Yeah.
Pundits. And also, again, I would even say criminals, like to say like, don't worry about wearing masks. Like, I mean, that to me is like, we're over a line in terms of, responsibility for public health, but for folks who have been trying, have integrity as journalists, I think that how can you say anything when the whole point of when somebody's whole methodology is to create so much happening at once that nothing stands out? And I just will think like, oh my God, those people must just be. Like, what must that be like to be one of those people who have been trying to, like, just, and he doesn't appear publicly as a president. He had, he didn't do press conferences. He didn't, like, give speeches in a way that was at all normative. So folks are covering, like, 97 tweets mixed with actual policy that's being signed, mixed with international news that you're not even sure if the president is aware of, mixed with like individual governors all having their own plan for a pandemic. I do have some compassion for
it's been a tough job. It's been a tough job.
But I would also say the day that Twitter took away his account was one of the most peaceful days on Twitter. Like, it was one of the days where there was, like, very little false news. There was very little violence. And, you know, and I wonder, someone said, what if this had happened a month ago or 2 months ago? You know, there's censorship, but then there's also, like, getting rid of batshit crazy people who are also presidents of a nation who are leading their countries into the ground. And so, you know, and using something like Twitter as a megaphone to spew lies and to incite anger and state, you know, basically lead people into a coup. So I think
let's actually talk about that. He's been deplatformed on a lot of it on Twitter permanently, but on Facebook indefinitely. I think on Pinterest permanently. He's been cut off from major corporate donors. Even banks like Deutsche Bank, who had been like the one bank that had kind of stuck with him, have declined to work with him. Corporate donors have pulled out from, making donations to a lot of Republicans. Which also means his kind of future prospects of getting any kind of like corporate money is probably over. What does this guy, who's now just a guy without a Twitter account, what does he do now?
I love this story. He can't do much, which is the good news. But I was reading that in all of the rallies, in all of the recent rallies, they were collecting people's phone numbers. So he still has a phone, you know? So the thought process is that, well, if he can't amplify his message on Twitter and Facebook and YouTube, and a lot of the news networks want nothing to do with him. And also, you know, that's from the media standpoint. From a messaging standpoint, he's a little screwed, but he can still call you. So all those, what was it, 2 million people that gave him his phone number?
Yeah, it's 2.6 million people downloaded the official Trump 2020 mobile app. Yeah. And you had to give them your phone number in order to do it. And you had to agree to be called.
Download
the app, right? So,
not those people.
But I want to say 2.6 million. Yeah. But I mean, 2.6 million people is not 88 million people, which is the number of followers he had on Twitter. It is, you know, and even if he goes to Parler or Gab, it's like mainstream people aren't on Parler or Gab. So what does, you know, he can't broaden his base. I think he's only going to be hearing from like-minded people on Parler and Gab. I think part of it for him was to be bombastic and annoy people who hated him. You know, that was part of the thrill, which he's not going to have on those other sites. And I think also like places like, you know, the August, 60 Minutes or, you know, your PBSs, your CBSs, all that stuff are not going to be interviewing him. They're just,
Book deals. I mean, at least not like the Simon and Schuster's of the world, because we've already seen what happens when they extend a book deal to a right winger who supported, you know, the voting lie, the election
lies. Right.
They have their other authors walk, and it's really bad for business. So he's toxic, and that's the truth of it.
You know, I want to say something though about what you were saying about Twitter and like the news. First of all, I am one of maybe very few people. I've never followed him on Twitter, and in fact, I blocked him before he ever ran.
Yeah. Same.
So it doesn't matter if you do that, because you'll still see what he says and or what he said. And one thing I will say though is that like I don't think that Jack Dorsey bears. Obviously, we've known for a while what is going on Twitter, but there is this period like before we fully understood that the president was going to use it like to try to overthrow democracy, where this is what we all chose to pay attention. That algorithm is built on our interest in anxiety. You know, to be honest, our desire, all of us, to pay attention to things that are that make us feel the worst. Like upsetting. We really want to pay attention to the things that we hate. And so I'm not even saying that I'm outside of that. I'm actually saying that I wonder if, like, I think individually, this is something that we're going to have to continue to reckon with, that person aside, because especially for the generations that are growing up, you know, Twitter's from 2006. Like, I was already doing stand-up before that. You know, I already was an adult before that. I already had dated people before that. But that's not true for so many people. And so I think the fact that those, that specifically Twitter as and Facebook, which I guess still exists, although I haven't been for many moons. But, you know, like Instagram.
Hey, my aunt comments on my posts regularly, Cameron. Okay. So Facebook very much still exists.
Absolutely. Instagram being a little bit more of a projection of, like, here's who I am. I would say Twitter is more of a projection of here's what I hate, you know, and all of that is really psychologically damaging to have to show everybody who you are and what you hate constantly every day. And I don't think that we will lose that just because he's no longer on the platform. And I wonder what that will be like for our continued mental health.
Well, the fuck? I mean, I've been talking about this shit for a while because I am someone who is very much on all of these social platforms and constantly talking about
hating
them.
Has he been banned from TikTok? Is TikTok still left?
No, I think
I'm sure the Chinese would love him.
Well, that would be funny since he personally was...
Yeah. Tried to... Right.
Anyway. I also think... But... The way TikTok works, I wonder if he would be okay with it because you can duet people and you can uplift what they're saying, but you can also humiliate them. And for him, you know, this is like his biggest fear is humiliation and failure. It's actually like fascinating to imagine him on TikTok.
You thought about this?
No, I haven't thought about it. It's my first thought.
Speaking of humiliation, thought. One thing we didn't talk about was his last little mini speech before he got on Air Force One.
Oh my!
So he did wish the Biden administration, like, I don't know if he named Biden, but I think he said, "I wish the future administration success," or whatever. And he added, "We set them up for success." Like, they have everything in place for success, which I thought was real hilarious.
He was like, don't mess things up too much.
I was like, most administrations love walking into a death toll of 400,000. That's real setting up for success. And he also said, he sort of said a couple of like civil things. And then he sort of closed it out with, we will be back in some form, which was also very menacing.
He was like, have a nice life, and then we'll be back after this commercial break. And then also, ladies, he said, he referenced the coronavirus in the past tense. Did you catch that? He was
I didn't catch that.
It was one of the worst pandemics in history. And we're like, thanks for letting me know it's over.
The entire inauguration now was fully masked because it's still happening,
right,
sir. So I think he does have something in mind. I don't think there was all this talk about like him launching a channel to rival Fox and all that stuff. You sort of need donors and stuff like that. And
you need money.
You need a lot of money.
You need billions of dollars.
You also need cable to buy in, like a buy-in from cable in that they'll carry you. And if you're like persona non grata for like most of the business world, I just don't see that happening. It just seems when the PGA pulled out and when corporate donors pulled out and when Deutsche Bank pulled out, I was like, oh, I truly think so many of his path, like he could just legitimately end up in prison or filing for bankruptcy because he owes about $1 billion or something that he's personally liable for, the Trump Organization does. So the future doesn't look that rosy, I think,
I
for
don't
this
know.
Guy.
I mean, it depends on how long, you know, straight white men get the benefit of a shorter memory. And we do love a comeback story from these really relatable and pushed down by culture figures, like like Donald Trump, who almost had no chances to succeed in his life. And so you just really want to hit an underdog like him to get a chance to really succeed, you know, to really have the option. I know it's much smaller scale for many of these people, but, you know, I look at the like Me Too movement fallout in the entertainment industry and then where we are in terms of how long that really meant somebody was sidelined. And, it, you know, for like Bill Cosby.
Forever.
But for different people, really different amounts of time.
Right.
But was Twitter taken away from them? I mean, here's the thing about Donald Trump. He has been known to be this comeback guy. If you even look at, like, you know, his bankruptcies.
Like Atlantic City.
Right. Yeah, yeah. I mean, The Apprentice was like the ultimate comeback. It earned him $500 million, which basically resuscitated him. But, you know, he had the advantage, even though he had lost all that money and lost all that business, but he had the advantage of still having resources, important resources, right? Like rich people who would give him his money, a network that would give him a TV show, companies that were willing to license his name and put it on stakes and buildings and things like that. Like that, and that's his game. It knows the money game. He knows how, he's been very good at making money. How does he make money now?
Yeah.
He could make money overseas. That's where people are now speculating, is that maybe there's opportunities elsewhere.
Yeah, there's like a couple of dudes from like the Emirates and you know, I don't know,
so
India
go there.
Or something
fine.
Where they were like, we're still very much in business with him. So that might be fine. And there's also always the MyPillow guy.
Oh yeah.
You know, if you need a sponsor, if he wants to launch a podcast and he needs a sponsor, he can always hawk those pillows.
Yeah. I'm curious about the timing on what you're talking about. I don't disagree that right now everything is dried up.
Right.
I just am curious as to
a year from now.
Like, is this like a penalty box situation?
Sure.
Or is this like things are over?
Right. And is it Bill Cosby or is it one of the other guys?
I'm
UCK.
I want to know where Melania ends up. Is anyone else interested? I'm not like invested in her success at all, but I'm really curious, like, what was their conversation in that helicopter ride to Air
I'm
Force
divorcing
One.
You.
I assume they haven't talked in years.
This is over. Yeah. I'm interested in the way that, like, if you're standing in a grocery store line and you catch sight of the tabloids and you read the headline, I will read the headline. And that is the extent of my interest. I mean, but it is. You know what? I'm more interested in a book from her than I am from him.
Yes, I want the
tell-all.
Because
it's like, what was it like to be married to that? Of course, I'm like talking about it like they're already divorced. I cannot imagine a divorce is not coming. I mean, that has to be in the
world. I can. Oh, I think she's staying.
Oh,
she's staying.
Oh, but she seems so fucking miserable.
The thing is, I don't know what she saw in the guy, but clearly he had at one point a lot of money and that was probably attractive. He doesn't have that clearly now.
It's the bronzer. It's the face bronzer that keeps her coming
back. I also wonder, like, where are all their things going? Because they can't, you know, Mar-a-Lago has been like, you can stay for a little bit, but then you got to get out. Like, where are they going? Where's all their stuff going?
They have, there's residency issues with Palm Beach, all of that stuff. I don't know. It's going to be very interesting.
We
have to wrap up this segment. I want to say in closing that we fucking don't have to talk about this guy very much longer. Unfortunately, for Fake the Nation listeners, apologies, we will make mention of the conviction trials that will theoretically be happening in the Senate. So we still have to like talk about the insurrection and talk about him for like a touch longer. But I think I remember this feeling, you know, in early November of 2016, where I was like, I'm so excited because in a few days I don't have to fucking talk about this guy anymore. And then I was wrong and I had to keep talking about him for 4 years. But now I actually you know, I think the clouds are breaking and the sun is shining and we don't have to talk about it. But what we do have to do is take a quick break. And we're going to learn about our sponsors who keep the lights on here at Fake the Nation, whom we love. And we come back, we're going to talk about the future.
I am the type of person that has subscribed to things and I have forgotten about those things. I have paid twice for a children's educational app, and I didn't know that I was paying twice for several months. Until that is, I discovered Rocket Money, and because I use Rocket Money, it just showed up all these things. The thing that I was paying twice for that made me incredibly angry, thank God Rocket Money ended that for me. It also cancels the subscription for you, so you don't have to like go through the hassle of going to that site and figuring out how to cancel. They actually make canceling very difficult. I don't know if any of you have had the experience, but I have been on a roundabout 8 exit nightmare trying to unsubscribe to something before. Rocket Money eliminates that hassle. It also alerts you to an increase in subscription price. And this is something Rocket Money did for me. It negotiates a lower price for something you already subscribed to. So like for my cable bill, it got me a lower price. And I was very happy about that. Nearly 75% of people have subscriptions that they've forgotten about, which makes me feel better because I'm one of them. But it makes me feel terrible because what are we doing? Losing that money. I don't want to waste that money. And I know you don't want to waste that money. If you struggle with these kinds of purchases, if you struggle with finances in general, Rocket Money will help you with the budgeting, help you track your expenses, help you, like I said, cancel those unwanted subscriptions. It's a personal finance app that finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions. It monitors your spending. It helps you lower your bills so you can get back to saving. I mean, me and my husband have been on the warpath, and Rocket Money has been a really big part of that. It has over 5 million users with over $500 million in canceled subscriptions. The average member has saved up to $740 a year using the app's features, which is, I mean, that tracks for me. So stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions. Go to rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Again, that's rocketmoney.com/fakethenation. Save the money at rocketmoney.com/fakethenation.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, what's your secret? Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Today's show is sponsored by Prose. This is kind of, I feel like, you know, I'm on some sort of Lord of the Rings journey trying to figure out skincare. And I feel like this customized skincare line is really got my name on it. Basically, every bottle of Prose custom hair care and skincare, I tried the skincare just recently, is made to order and it's personalized. It's got a unique blend of naturally powerful and proven effective ingredients to meet your needs, like specifically you. And then the way they do it is you take this great, like in-depth quiz, basically. They analyze over 80 factors for a complete view of your life, your beauty goals. Like I have oily skin that's also dry, which is just a fun little conundrum. I live in New York City. Like we've got these four seasons. My face gets weird during seasonal shifts. All of these things I got to kind of talk about in answering the questions. The other fun thing was they asked us at the end, like, do you like a creamy type of moisturizer or like a less creamy kind? And I was kind of like, I think like less creamy. And they were like, that's fine. Like you can do that, but we think for your skin type, creamier is better. And I never knew that. So I love that there's so much kind of personal information that goes into creating this. I got my stuff in the mail very quickly after. I got a wonderful serum. Like I said, this very creamy moisturizer. And this also very just delectably creamy cleanser that just kind of feel like I think it's possible that I've been washing my face with just like harshness for like many years. Because when I saw this cleanser, I was like, oh, is this what it's supposed to feel like? It's supposed to feel like a little bit of a delight on my face. That's not what I've been doing. So I don't know, guys. And here's the thing. You don't have to take my word for it. In a third party, double blind dermatologist supervised controlled clinical study, which is like the gold standard for research studies, pros prove that personalization works better than off-the-shelf alternatives, which just sort of totally makes sense on a just logical level. If you think about it, just it makes common sense. Pros are so confident that you'll love your results that they're offering my listeners an exclusive trial offer so you can see the difference custom care can make. 50% of your first subscription order at pros.com/fakethenation will be taken off. That's pros.com/fakethenation. You get your free consultation and 50% off your one-of-a-kind formulas. Again, that's pros.com/fakethenation. Go and get your just super personalized, luxurious skincare products and hair care products. That's what I'm going to try next. So pros.com/fakethenation. Eat stress-free this spring with Factor's delicious, ready-to-eat meals. Every fresh, never-frozen meal is chef-crafted, dietitian-approved, and ready to eat in just 2 minutes. Choose from a weekly menu of 35 options, including popular options like Calorie Smart, Keto, Protein Plus, or Vegan and Veggie. Also, discover more than 60 add-ons every week, like breakfast, on-the-go lunch, snacks, and beverages to help you stay fueled and feel good all day long. What are you waiting for? Folks, I feel like I've mentioned this before, but I tried other services that I was displeased with. And then a neighbor of mine was trying Factor. I had pulled them aside in the hallway and I was like, what are you feeling about this Factor? And they were like, it is delicious. You should definitely do it. So then me and my husband did it and we loved it. They are chef-prepared meals that arrive to your door, and then in 2 minutes, you could be eating them. Like, it's so simple, and they're actually delicious. And for people like me who just sometimes, my schedule can be so maniacal between traveling in different cities and, you know, doing stand-up gigs. It's like I just don't have a typical schedule where I can plan, set aside time for cooking and all that stuff. So something like Factor really helps for me. The other thing that I love to do is try not to eat carbs. So they have a keto option, which is fantastic. It's super delicious. They use premium ingredients. You can get stuff with like filet mignon and shrimp and truffle butter and broccolini and asparagus, right? Like real ingredients. They're no fuss, no mess meals. They eliminate the hassle of having to prep. They're tailored to your schedule. You can customize your weekly meals with flexibility. You can pause or reschedule. I've actually done that. I've both paused and rescheduled. Factor is basically your solution for fast premium meals without the need for cooking. We're celebrating Earth Day all month long, and look out for the Earth Month Eats badge on the menu for the lowest carbon footprint meals. So here's what I think you should do. I think you should head to factormeals.com/fakethenation50 and use the code fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first month plus 20% off your next month. That's code fakethenation50 at factormeals.com/fakethenation50 to get 50% off your first box plus 20% off your next box while your subscription is active.
This HeadGum Podcast is brought to you by Aura Frames.
That is right.
From grandmothers to new mothers, aunts, even the friends of your life, every mom loves an Aura Frame.
Holy shit, even aunts?
Yes, especially aunts.
Oh, well.
Because it was named the best digital photo frame by Wirecutter and selected as one of Oprah's favorite things. I mean, these Aura Frames are guaranteed to bring joy to moms of all ages.
I believe it.
You have an Aura Frame, don't you?
Yes, I actually more than believe it. I know it. I've got one for my mom, my mother-in-law, my grandmother-in-law.
And dare I say, your aunt?
And dare you say, my aunt and my aunt-in-law. Everyone's got one. Everyone loves them.
I mean, Mother's Day is right around the corner, and there's no better gift than a digital photo frame. You give them the frame. It's got preloaded pictures in there, and you know what? You can update it with an app, so every time you take a new picture of a sweet little person or place or thing in your life, it gets automatically sent to that frame.
Exactly.
And right now, Aura has a great deal for Mother's Day. Listeners can save on the perfect gift by visiting AuraFrames.com to get $30 off plus free shipping on their best-selling frame. Holy smokes.
Excellent deal.
Yeah, that's AuraFrames.com. You use the code HEADGUM at checkout to save.
HEADGUM. Nice.
Yes. HeadGum. It's easy to set up. It's loved by everybody, including Oprah, including your aunt. Mm-hmm. So do check them out. That's AuraFrames.com. Use code HeadGum at checkout to save.
Damn right.
And terms and conditions apply, of course.
Of course.
Thanks again to Aura.
And we are back and we're ready with topic number two. Okay, so like I said, it happened. Joseph Biden is the president. Lady Gaga sang with a giant golden dove on her chest. Amy Klobuchar emceed with the skill of a real comic. By the one of her jokes was, Lady Gaga, you never thought you'd see Lady Gaga as the warm-up act for Chief Justice Roberts, which I thought, or was it J-Lo? Was it J-Lo?
It was J-Lo.
Sorry, you never thought you'd see J-Lo as a warm-up act for Chief Justice Roberts, which I thought was a solid joke for an MC. She kept the show moving. And then you know what Joseph Biden did? He had the thing that I didn't realize I loved so much in a president. He displayed nonstop amounts of fucking empathy and kindness on that dais. Didn't know that that was one of my number one qualities I wanted out of a president. And now I know. Tell me, what did you think of the speech? What did you think of the day so far?
Oh, I thought he said almost nothing, which is what I was looking for, actually, to be honest. I truly felt like I have no retention of any single word he said or inflection. I think that he is what's great about this person right now is that I think he has the ability to be a lot of different things because he's pretty blank. And I don't say that to be a dick either. Like I actually think it's an attribute we could really use right now.
Right. You're like, he's a flatbread and you can jazz him up with some sauce and mozzarella and then suddenly he's a pizza, but otherwise he's
a pizza. Yeah. Yeah, exactly. And I think that everything else around him, really stood out more than he did. I think like Kamala Harris's walking down the stairs and realizing that like Doug Imhoff is like not the fucking centerpiece of this moment,
yes,
was so cool to see. Yeah. I think it was a bummer that Sonia Sotomayor like messed up her, called her Kamala, not Kamala, but it's okay. Well, I'm sure that was a terrible moment for her. I noticed it in her eyes as somebody whose name.
Yeah, and I'm sure she's like, you know, sweating it out right now.
I also think it's like, how awesome to see that female performers have the right outfit for everything. Like Garth Brooks was wearing even somebody else's hair. And I love Garth Brooks, but like he didn't have the right outfit. He didn't even have his own hair to bring to the occasion. But like J-Lo, she can absolutely star in anything that you give her, but she also has this outfit, you know? And same thing with Lady Gaga, who could not have gotten me more when she gestured to the flag, that our flag was still there.
God,
but where
beautiful.
Is it, Gaga? She points to it. So, such a showman. Loved it.
Wait,
such a show
and can
person,
I just add to that? J-Lo, when she spoke, so one of the moments that really got me is when J-Lo spoke in Spanish.
She spiced that song also, up real nice.
Let's get
wept.
Loud.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's nice that she said, let's get loud.
That stuff was beautiful. Farnoosh, any of the theatrics really hit you? Because I will give you some
Biden quotes. I just want to mention Amanda Gorman before we move on. Yeah. I just want to say that that young poet was awesome.
Oh,
and I don't
want
to not say her name.
Yes.
Amanda Gorman. I've done a show with her in the past at the town hall in New York. It was probably 2 years ago. And so she was 20. And,
Jesus.
You know, sometimes you just meet a 20-year-old and you go, okay, congrats.
Yeah.
Like, you've got it and enjoy the rest of your life, you know? And so I just
want
to make
incredible.
Sure to say
she was incredible.
Amanda Gorman. Great job.
Yeah, great job.
I love all the pomp and circumstance. I mean, it's not like the Queen's Jubilee, but it's definitely nice to see all the women in their monochrome outfits. Did you notice that? Was there a memo that went out that was like, every female shall wear one color and layer and layers and layers of that color? And then like somehow they all magically showed up with a different color. Which I
do think that felt official.
It did,
I do think that, I actually think you're right that that was organized.
It was
lovely.
All for my
and
pleasure.
Hillary Clinton,
I loved it.
Hillary Clinton was rocking like a nice bipartisan purple.
Purple.
With a lot of ruffles, which I felt was a nod to 1984 Prince. So well done on both.
Michelle
those
Obama
fronts,
in her like cranberry, Jill Biden in her sort of like, I don't know how you like an aqua blue. It was beautiful. And
yeah,
then
it was lovely.
You know, I'm like I'm a real rule follower. I'm totally a straight line person. I was like, I would rock that walk from the end of the staircase to the outside of the Capitol where everyone's like in line and sort of I can only imagine the feeling, right? You just like, it's such a moment, especially if this is your dad or this is your, you know, someone you're going to be working
wife.
For. When Lady Gaga walked out, I didn't realize it was her. And I was like, who that chick who's coming out with that red ball gown? Like, this is not your show. You know, I was like, everyone's, did you not get the monochrome memo? Like, what are you doing? And then I was like, oh, it's Lady Gaga. Okay, she's allowed to do that. Only Lady Gaga could have gotten away with that outfit. And then I'm really proud to say that I recognized A-Rod through the mask. And my first thought was, is that A-Rod? Yes, it's A-Rod. What is he doing there? I was like, why does he think he can just show up to the inauguration? And then I realized it's because of J-Lo, and then I was okay with it. But I got really territorial.
I also thought the choice of Garth Brooks, we're talking the talk and walking the walk. Like, you're getting a flavor of America from these three performers. And Garth Brooks is sort of giving you, you know, that red state realness, if you will. And I thought that was a good and charming performance and choice, and I it worked. I mean, I don't know enough about like country music or whatever to know like his standing in today's country landscape, but I don't know. It seemed like a nice move.
Yeah, he's
and I agree with Cameron that I totally agree with you that he's very, you know, plain vanilla, but the awesomeness is in his ecosystem, all the people that he has surrounded himself with, the most diverse team, I think, in history in terms of all the representation. So that's
hands
exciting.
Down. Wait, I do want to, I'm going to stand up for Joseph Robinette for a second, because I do think that he brought some actual rhetoric to the table. He wasn't all flatbread. He was some, you know, flatbread with that, what is that, like za'atar spices. For example, he said, one of the things he said, the dream of justice for all will be deferred no longer. That was a nod to, you know, his plans on racial justice, also a nod to the diversity of his cabinet. And then this, I think this is something that a refrain that he's come to again and again throughout the campaign, which I think he believes in very strongly. And I, Nagin Farzad, believe in very strongly. He said, politics doesn't have to be a raging fire destroying everything in its path. Yes, it does not. It is okay for us to be nice to each other. And that's not just like, to me, that's not just like a nothing saying. That's something we really need to take to heart, because it's our inability to talk about things as if they are, we do turn everything into a raging fire as opposed to like a polite, you know, disagreement.
Discourse. Mm-hmm.
And it's completely eating away at us. I think that's something that I really, really appreciated. He also took a moment to shout out the truth, just like we defending the truth, the power of a truth, the need to dispel lies. I thought that was a great moment. He talked about we must end this war that pits red against blue, rural versus urban. Again, these are divides that we have just it started, I want to say, with Newt Gingrich, and it has just gotten worse and worse and worse and worse, where we're just like red versus blue, Democrats and Republicans are at each other's throats, and it's for blood. And it just fully 100% doesn't have to be this way. And if we all made the decision, and not even all, but if just like a nice plurality of us made the decision not to behave that way, it wouldn't be that way. So that's my defense of his content there.
I really disagree with you, but I say this in a, I think that it is a privilege to be able to say we should speak nicely to each other. And that's one thing that I really like about Joe Biden, actually, is that he does get to say that. And that I don't think he's supposed to be super fancy, because I do think his place in history is to point to the people around him who have more at stake in many of these topics. Something that I, you know, really believe is that a lot of times when we're talking about bipartisan disagreement on an issue, one of the parties includes and represents the group of people that is more affected by this issue. And I think that we've been ignoring that and pretending that that's not true. And that is why that is literally what Donald Trump ran on, is like, let's pretend that different people aren't affected by policy differently. And I think that like what, I do like that that's what he's going to say, because I actually think he's also going to put people around him that can't say that. And that is a nice, I think that's a nice combination of things. I don't think the president should be the one who says, let's scream at each other. Because But I also think it's a position of privilege to do that. And I think it's like, what you're supposed to do is pick all of the people around you who have the vested interest in each of the different topics. You know, like, get the people who are going to be screwed and have them have a voice. And I think that like, that's what's really, that's why I hear what you're saying, but like, I think what I want from him is for him to just say a lot of folks, doesn't have to be this way. And then to call up the people who say it really does. And here's why.
Well, the culture of the top thing.
Just be chill about this.
Just in terms of, you know, you read these reports of like the best companies to work at and all that stuff and why they're the best company. And, you know, some of them will be like, oh, because they have great maternity leave. They have really generous vacation policies. They respect workers, work-life balance. Like there's all these reasons, right, why a company becomes like one of the best places to work in. And I think it's because there's a decision made at the top that like, oh, we're going to respect work-life balance. We're going to respect mothers. We're going to respect. It's like setting the tone at the top ends up affecting how an entire organization operates and feels about being there. And that, I think, is what's happening in, you know, on a much, much larger level with the country, right?
It's really well
said. You set the fucking tone and then it trickles down, and then generally people can be like less disagreeable. Like, oh yeah, it if the tone at the top is anger and menace and threats and lies, that's the thing that trickles down. So if this like flatbed pizza is serving up tender kindness and soft sauce, then like that's what we're all going to be kind of steeped in. And I think that, you know, you're right. He has the power to do it where he sits.
And I actually think if, you know, I think we're saying the same thing, but it's like, but exploring different parts of it. Because I actually think if the top is softer, the bottom can be more disagreeable with that having less effect.
He's just the cherry on top, guys.
You know what I mean? Like, I think like AOC then gets to exist and Ted Cruz gets to exist, but we're not worried about like everything burning to the ground because it's apparent.
Right.
It's a parent with children who are screaming. And I'm not saying AOC is a child. I'm just saying I believe in everything she's saying. I just mean it's like.
Yeah, no, I like that. It's a parent with children screaming metaphor. Yeah.
I mean, I think what I was going to say, I think you're both on the same team here. I think you can both agree that when you're at a top leadership, in a top leadership role, your role is really to set the tone and make sure that you put in place the right kind of people who will have more objection or willing to debate, are not obviously going to sugarcoat things and really do the harder work of, you know, the real change that needs to happen. But absolutely, I mean, that's truly, that's any good leader, though. I think what we're describing is whether you're the leader of a country or, you know, like, I would hope that I work for somebody.
Furnished. We're like literally exploring the alphabet right now because we've been deprived of it for like, you know, it's like the bar is so low right now, like, but it's like we have not been able to like just luxuriate in these basics for four years. So I feel like that's what's happening.
Or it's back to basics. Maybe that's a good theme for the next 4 years. It's not about, I mean, well, in some capacity, I think that there's a real sense of urgency for changing a lot of rules. But I think that back to the basics in terms of what it means to lead and have empathy. Right. And, you know, these basics, kindness, healthy debate, healthy discourse. It's okay to disagree. It's not a zero-sum game either. You know, some will win, some will lose. But, you know, it's basic stuff. And Joe Biden is basic. He's bringing basic back. He's not bringing sexy back. He's bringing basic back. Obama brought sexy. Biden is bringing basic. And at this point in our history, that is what we need.
That's what we need. Well, and how basic it is to, like, see the former presidents there. And I just, you know, I think that for me is, it really speaks to, I think, a shout out on this particular day to the former presidents and first ladies, some of whom I do not have love in my heart for.
Indeed.
But who were there. And also, like, for Bernie Sanders for showing up and becoming so memeable with his mittens and his jacket. Like, I just really appreciate, Hillary Clinton being, I mean, obviously she's going to be there. She's not a fucking maniac who's on Air Force One.
Right.
But just appreciating those folks being human beings. And, like, especially, you know, somebody like Bernie, who has shown up and been a human over the last bunch
of years.
Right,
but also especially someone like George W., right, who, like, was the, you know, a hated president by liberals for 8 years. I mean, and, like, it's funny because hated is a strong word for what we then, like, were able to summon for Donnie. But I think it was. And, you know, look, Mike Pence was there. He was, you know, he did kowtow to Donnie for many years. But in this 11th hour, he certified the fucking votes. And he was still able to just, like, summon the whatever minor percent of him that is human and show up and be civil and shake some hands. You know what I mean? Like, he managed to do that. And I think that's what it should have been, you know, like, that's obviously, I know, I can't, we're like.
It only took putting a bounty on his head to get him to realize maybe I should.
Right, no, exactly, you know, no, exactly. I mean, I'm not trying to give him too much credit. But it is, look, I'm sure he's getting death threats for it. So, you know, but let's talk about.
Well, I really appreciated being able to see him shown. It was like, I'm really glad that, another side effect of the stupid president not being there, former president, was that then the Veep got the full send off. And that was so healing for me because I truly, really, really dislike Mike Pence with every fiber of my being. It's just really nice watching his full departure, like all of it. Like, I really enjoyed watching that.
I love your optimism. It was the momentous. I love how you look at the glass half full. Truly.
All right. Well, let's talk a little bit about Biden's plans for the next few days and weeks. He's got a mass mandate on federal property, which includes, you know, those anti-maskers in the House and Senate who don't want to wear a mask on federal property. They would have to, or else they would be flouting the mandate. And also on interstate travel, which I don't know exactly what that means. He's going to pause student loan payments, which affects me and my husband. Thank you. He's going to overturn the Muslim ban. Hey, Muzzies, it's been a tough one. We're turning it around. He's going to rejoin the Paris Climate Accord because, you know, the earth is falling apart. And he's, in terms of COVID response, we're going to be rejoining the World Health Organization. So that's fun. You know, they're also obviously working on a COVID relief bill. We already heard about that. He's sending an immigration bill to Congress, which is probably a more medium term thing, but it'll help 11 million undocumented immigrants find a roadmap to citizenship. I mean, there's more. There's stuff revoking the Keystone Pipeline permit, or he's trying to make 30% of America's lands and waters protected by 2030. He's going to repeal the tax cuts to help pay for some of this. The 2017 tax cuts, which were Donnie's, I guess, only we'll use the word achievement. They are like kind of the only big thing he did when he had all three branches of government.
He didn't bring us into a war. He didn't bring us into a war. He just killed more Americans that would have died at a war.
So does a civil war kind of count? Like
Yeah, you're right. He didn't bring us into a foreign war.
Right.
But he did.
And you know, the
do much more damage.
His tax reform.
Yeah, much more damage.
His tax reform was great for corporations. It wasn't great for everyday
people.
That's
such a good point.
Yes. If you're a homeowner, you can no longer deduct all of the interest on your home. You cannot deduct all of the property taxes. So like the really bringing into question the financial value of becoming a homeowner, which for millennia has been like the way that people build wealth in this country. And it's like the American dream. So he kind of shattered the American dream there with his tax reform. And the trickle-down effect did not happen.
Yeah, he also broke jokes because very few people throughout history have said a serious thing that you knew was serious that also affected lots of people and then said, just joking, so ineffectively. Like very few people have been able to carry that off throughout time where each time he was joking, right. It wasn't even close to a joke. So far from a joke. That we no longer know what jokes are. And the breakout stand-up comic of the era, Sarah Cooper, was just verbatim saying what the president was saying.
That's how you know he broke jokes.
Nothing
comedy.
Was funnier That's than true. Just who he is and happens to
Wait,
be.
So Cameron, I have a question for you. We're both stand-up comedians. I mean, I was never like the type of person to do like kind of the day-to-day operational political jokes. But I mean, I do have this podcast. Do you worry? Now that I'm even asking this question, I feel dumb asking, but do you worry about there being just too many Democrats and you feeling good and not being able to write jokes? I don't know. This is a dumb question.
Well, I mean, when I look at the last 4 years in stand-up, like I said, I mean, the special that I put out in this time was called Rape Jokes, and it's about sexual assault, and it was a fundraiser for RAIN. Like, that is where comedy was at. Like, right. I just mean, the funniest thing I could do was raise money for a rape crisis hotline. And that is, like, when I look at, you know, who had, like, breakout moments, it's like the Hannah Gadsby
right, 4 years. Right.
Like that was still within this time. Big deal, like already famous dude comics released big specials. But like the things that were happening in the comedy world were either like the growth of personal political statements and the growth of like absolutely absurdity, like absolute absurdity that has no bearing on anything like a Kate Berlant or or John Early version of things.
Right.
Anyway, I think what is interesting is that there's like, there's no place right now in comedy to talk about like airplanes. the perennial jokes,
right, like
that
snacks.
Were like, remember, yeah. Like just being around in the world, like that's not where we are. We're like, this is how I feel. Or it's like, what if reindeers were people? You know, like there's nothing in the middle anymore.
I really hope, because I think the era ate up parts of my comedy brain. Like I used to enjoy Twitter and then I stopped, right?
Yeah.
Like I used to enjoy posting jokes, right? And then I stopped. Or like, so I feel like there's going to be a dawn of a new comedy era where a lot of us reclaim our comedy brains that had been usurped. Fardoush, where do you feel like, in talking about the future of your brain space? Where do you feel?
Well, as someone who has taken a comedy class and performed
okay.
a couple
so
of times.
A veteran.
I mean, yeah. There's so much humor in, you have to laugh or you're going to fucking cry. Like, this is my life every day. You know, being a mom of two kids, homeschooling them, working, living all the things under one roof, being afraid of getting COVID all the time. Like, right now I have a little bit of a sinus infection and I'm like, my husband's like, is it COVID? And I'm like, I don't even know. He's like, okay, well, just like hang out in the bedroom for a while because, you know, just in case. And I'm like, okay, is that really going to solve the problem? So I guess there's always comedy, right? Comedy is like my teacher said, right? She said, make jokes about what you know, like your life. Like if there's something that's stuck in your head and you can't get out of your head, there's probably something really funny about that. Like if something bothers you or annoys you. And what could be, are we out of things that are bothering us or are we out of things that are annoying us right now? Is that to suggest, you know, that there's no material for that? I think that actually it's fertile ground. And look, you know, we don't need treachery and disaster and crime in order to like become
yeah.
to have fertile ground for jokes.
To have
like,
stuff to say, yeah.
You know, comedians have been around for all sorts of types of presidencies and, you know, political climates.
I've used this metaphor before, but I do think we're going to go through like that methadone period where we just need like doses of shittiness or something so that we can acclimate to something that's just more normal, like in, you know, more until we can acclimate to the flatbread. Like, I feel like we just need like a couple of hits of the methadone.
I have some favorite comedians and I have stopped in some cases and been like, I can't wait for this to hear this person's joke on what just happened or what
right,
we just experienced.
Right,
like, you
right.
know that the jokes are getting written. And as much as I don't want to relive the history that we just lived in these last 4 years, I think that it's healthy to laugh about, you know, it's sort of the best way to re-experience something, right? Is to look back and sort of laugh. But I'm hopeful for the industry, if that's what the question is. Like, I think
I don't think that was the question,
but I like that. That's,
thank you.
That you're clearing it
I
up.
I think you guys also have jobs.
Hopefulness. Listen, yeah. We have to wrap up the show. I just want to ask you in closing, what do you want to say on this day? What are your final thoughts on this day? You know, that's like a really broad question. And I'm going to say, here are my final thoughts. Things, because we're still very heavily steeped in a pandemic, the death toll has surpassed now 400,000. It's so fucking bleak, but I feel like better and better each day. I know more and more people that have gotten vaccinated. I feel better and better each day that more formal institutions are going to be handling domestic terrorism, because that's what's happening. And that they'll be able to make inroads, because we always have, because threats to the government have always existed. The difference is before there were people within the government whose job it was to thwart them. And we didn't have that for some time. And now we're going to go back to having that. So those things make me feel really hopeful. I don't know. I see my neighbors and I feel good. Cameron.
You know, I'm just trying to not experience any of this alone, even if folks are not around. You know, I think, like, for me, I will just say that I can be funny, sure, but this presidency took me out. Like, it did. Yeah. Like, there's, like, I'm not here for you. Like, you two or anybody listening to this. Like, you voted this person in. You took me out. Like, I just, like, you, like, I fully was down for the count on this one. Like, I feel like it's like, well, we have to laugh if we don't cry. It was such a good point. Except that, like, what happens when you're just like, dog, I need a minute to process all this. And, you know, like, the thing that I will say is that what this presidency gave me was knowing that, like, I cannot fix this. There is no joke that's funny enough to overcome this guy's idiocy. And there is no, like, you know, I can't prevent a pandemic, it turns out. Although at the very beginning, you would have thought by my planning that I thought, you know, that I could. And I think I was a really different person in terms of my thoughts about my own independence. And, like, I need other people. I need friends. I got up this morning and I was on a Zoom call with a bunch of people, just muted, watching the same thing on the TV, which was the inauguration. And, like, I have loved understanding my interdependence on everyone around me throughout the last year, but also throughout the last 4 years. And, like, I'm not special. I love knowing that.
People,
like,
need people. So people need people. Oh,
people,
my God. Yeah.
Need people. So if you're, like, you know, listening to this podcast for companionship, which is something I totally do, hello, this is your companion, Cammie. But also, like, I hope you get some other folks in your day to day, whether through FaceTime or Zoom or across waving at your neighbors like you are, Nagin. It's amazing. We are truly, actually, it turns out, all in this together.
Mm. Yeah. No, like, literally, yes. Farnoosh, final thoughts.
Well, I think sort of I take a page out of this book I was reading about the psychology of money. And the writer was like, the best way to manage your money is to have sort of like this short-term pessimism or short-term panic, cautionary optimism in the short run, but optimism in the long run. And so, you know, I think that a lot of times when I think about money, I extrapolate that to talking about life, because money is oftentimes the underpinning of, you know, a lot of the decisions that we make. And there's so many relationships between money and life. And so taking that and applying it to the last 4 years and what's to come, I think today's inauguration made me very hopeful. And, you know, while it wasn't, you know, the Super Bowl of inaugurations, it was a step in the right direction for, you know, I think we can all agree. And that we still need to hold Joe Biden and his cabinet accountable. We still need there's a lot of work to be done, which I think he understands clearly. But I hope that we, you know, that we still remember that we're in a pandemic, we're in a recession, people are dying. There's a lot of people that still think the election was stolen from Trump. Like, there's a lot that we have to sort of reckon with. And only until then can we, you know, can we really feel like we're moving towards making positive momentum, and that I'm still confident about the future. So I'm still, like, investing in the stock market. I'm still making plans. I'm still, you know, supporting people who want to have kids. I'm still, you know, all the things. Life goes on, but I think right now we still need to be vigilant and not get just be like, okay, well, that 4 years was really, like, scrunch that up, throw that in the trash, like, blank slate. Like, no, it's still a very messy slate and we need to untangle a lot. And so I think for me and I think everyone, those are important reminders that, like, we're still in a mess. Sorry.
Yeah, the work isn't over.
Yeah.
But it's still hopeful. I love that. And you know what? Thank you so much for joining me today and for, like, watching so much inauguration television, and for being able to talk about all of it today with me and your feelings. I still feel, like, weird and emotional. So thank you for being with me. I would love for the people of Faith Nation to be able to follow you and all the stuff that you do. Farnoosh, where do they do that?
You can
Follow me on the So Money podcast. You can subscribe to So Money podcast everywhere podcasts are available. And I'm having a lot of fun on Instagram, not TikTok, not really so much Twitter or Facebook, but Instagram is kind of like still a nice sort of, you know, everyone's friendly-ish on Instagram. So at Farnoosh Tarabi on the IG.
And Cameron, where do they follow you? And what do you want them to look at?
I'm Cameron Esposito everywhere. And I got a book that came out in the pandemic that was called Save Yourself.
Oh, I heard it's a bestseller.
I like that book. It is a bestseller. And I have a podcast that's called Query, where I talk to LGBTQ plus luminaries is the word I use. And that can mean a lot of different things. But it's everywhere you listen to podcasts.
Folks, absolutely subscribe to Query, subscribe to So Money. Just enjoy all of the stuff that these ladies put out there because they're so great. You know where to follow me and that I'm newly on TikTok. I'm embarrassed because I also hate social media. It's a weird feeling. But what I would really like to do is thank the people that make Fake the Nation possible. That's our wonderful producer, Anita Flores, our talented audio engineer, Andy Christens. Gabby Alter wrote our theme music. Lily Fleshler helps with research. And we would love to hear from you. Send us your feedbacks or topics we should be chatting about, guest ideas you might have. You can leave us a voicemail at 331-901-0005 or drop us a line at comments@fakethenation.com. And if you like what you hear, please favorite Fake the Nation on Stitcher, follow us on Spotify, subscribe on Apple Podcasts, Pandora, and the SiriusXM app, and do leave us a review on Apple Podcasts because it helps more people find the show. Folks, and I'm going to be doing some Instagram live conversation, so make sure you follow me on Instagram so you can see some of those. I will be back in your earballs next week. Bye.